I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's September 13th, and we have a lot to talk about. In addition to its physical symptoms, MS can also affect your emotional well-being. Depression, persistent anxiety, and extreme irritability are all common. And just like the physical symptoms of MS, they require treatment. But people living with MS tend to focus on their physical health and too often end up neglecting their mental health, which can lead to unfortunate and sometimes even tragic consequences. Living with chronic stress and anxiety weakens your immune system, leaving you more susceptible to other illnesses like heart disease, diabetes, and depression. Research tells us that one out of every two people living with MS will experience clinical depression. And the statistics tell us that people living with MS are twice as likely to attempt suicide compared to the general population. The really good news here is that conditions like anxiety and depression can be effectively treated. And there are even things you can do for yourself on your own that will mitigate depression, lessen your anxiety, and improve your mental health. Dr. Dawn Eady returns to the podcast today to talk about maintaining and strengthening your emotional well-being when you're living with MS, and she'll introduce us to a new resource that I think you'll find really helpful. Dr. Eady is a clinical psychologist in the University of Washington Medicine Division of Clinical and Neuropsychology, a professor of rehabilitation medicine. She's the recipient of the Nancy and Buster Alvord Endowed Professorship in MS Research, and Dr. Eady is also a member of the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Dawn Eady, there are a few other things that you should know about. I want to give you a quick reminder that the National MS Society's Hispanic Latinx MS Experience Summit is taking place in just 2 days on September 15th. It's a virtual interactive program that offers participants an opportunity to connect with others in the Hispanic Latinx community, learn from leading experts in research and health, and give voice to the unique needs of the Hispanic Latinx MS community. For a long time, MS was considered to be a disease that affected middle-aged white women. Today, we know that's never been true. Evidence continues to illustrate the health disparities, inequities, and social determinants of health that impact members of underserved communities who are living with MS. The Hispanic Latinx MS Experience Summit will provide a safe space to raise awareness and network in order to better face and overcome the daily challenges of living with MS. There's no cost to participate, and sessions will be offered in both English and Spanish. If you'd like to learn more about the Hispanic Latinx MS Experience, or you're ready to register for the event, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Determining the right disease-modifying medication for any individual requires a careful balancing of a number of different variables. That's why it's beneficial to have more than 20 different drug candidates to choose from. This collection of medications can sort itself into two categories: low-efficacy therapies and high-efficacy therapies. The low-efficacy therapies tend to be older drugs with mild side effects. Many second-generation disease-modifying medications fall into the category of high-efficacy therapies. They're much more powerful, and they can be accompanied by more pronounced side effects. So a research team in Japan wanted to compare the difference in brain atrophy and disease activity among people with relapsing-remitting MS, some of whom received low-efficacy therapies and some of whom received the newer high-efficacy therapies. The low-efficacy treatments in this study included Avonex, Rebif, Betaseron, Tecfidera, and Copaxone. The high-efficacy treatments included Tysabri and Gilenya. Now, 25 study participants were treated with low-efficacy therapies, and 19 study participants were treated with high-efficacy therapies. Within each of these groups, each participant's doctor determined which specific therapy they would receive based upon that individual patient's disease activity and other variables, including patient choice. After 2 years, 84% of the study participants who were given high-efficacy therapies showed no evidence of disease activity, compared to 44% of the study participants who were given low-efficacy therapies. And when we talk about no evidence of disease activity, we specifically mean no relapses, no worsening disability, and no new or enlarging lesions on MRI scans. While whole brain atrophy seemed to be about the same for both groups, the study participants who were given low-efficacy disease-modifying therapies experienced more evident brain volume loss in specific regions of the brain. The study participants who were given high-efficacy disease-modifying therapies had significantly less atrophy in the cerebral cortex, which is the outermost part of the brain that manages higher cognitive functions. Now, this small study appears to make the case that high-efficacy disease-modifying medications do a better job of reducing disease activity as well as mitigating the loss of brain volume. But because this was a small study, it's going to require a larger study to confirm these important outcomes. And fortunately, that larger study is already underway. It's called TREAT-MS. Now, TREAT-MS is an acronym for traditional versus early aggressive therapy for multiple sclerosis. This trial involves 900 participants at 45 different sites across the United States. The principal investigators for TREAT-MS are Drs. Ellen Mowry and Scott Newsom. Both Dr. Mowry and Dr. Newsom are friends of the podcast. And if you'd like to listen to my conversation with Dr. Mowry about TREAT-MS, you can check out episode number 143 of Real Talk MS. And if you'd like to review the details of this study from Japan, you'll find that link in today's show notes. While there may be some debate among clinicians as to whether it's best to start with a low-efficacy disease-modifying therapy or a high-efficacy disease-modifying therapy, the one thing they all agree on is that early treatment with a disease-modifying therapy leads to better long-term outcomes. So I'm hopeful that most of you who are listening to this podcast are on a DMT, no matter where you are in your MS journey. But if you need one more piece of evidence that you should be on a disease-modifying therapy, please consider this. Newly published results from a Canadian study showed that being on a disease-modifying therapy is associated with living longer than people with MS who aren't on a DMT. A research team analyzed administrative health database records from 1996 through 2017 from four Canadian provinces, representing about 25% of Canada's total population. Now, a total of 35,894 people living with MS were identified in this group. The majority of these 35,894 people had been on low-efficacy disease-modifying therapies, but there were some who were on high-efficacy drugs. And the study results show that using any disease-modifying therapy, low efficacy or high efficacy, was associated with a 26 to 33% lower risk of mortality compared to using no disease-modifying therapy. The results also showed that very early initiation of a low-efficacy DMT was associated with a significant reduction of mortality risk when compared to no use of a DMT. So I'm not sure if we're ready to say that starting and staying on a disease-modifying therapy is a matter of life and death, but as it turns out, that could very well be the case. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. People as young as 2 years old have been diagnosed with MS. and people continue to live with MS well into their senior years. But the majority of people living with MS in the United States are diagnosed between the ages of 20 and 50, the same age range that could be called your prime working years. These are the years when people advance in their jobs, they earn promotions, and they earn more money. But when you add a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis into the mix, things can sometimes change, especially when you consider how some MS symptoms like fatigue, depression, spasticity, pain, vision impairment, and cognitive issues might affect someone's ability to do their job. So a research team made up of scientists from pharmaceutical company Sanofi, along with the University of Texas at Austin and the University of Arizona, wanted to examine the productivity loss among working-age individuals who are living with MS. The researchers analyzed national data from 2005 to 2015 that was collected by the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. This is a survey conducted by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. The researchers identified 104 employed adults with MS between the ages of 18 and 64, and 312 employed adults without MS who would serve as controls in this study. The control group matched the group with MS in terms of their age, sex, and race or ethnicity. When the research team analyzed the study participants' household makeup, other medical conditions — these other conditions are called comorbidities — and missed days of work, they determined that people living with MS missed an average of nearly 9 work days a year. The people in the control group, the people who didn't have MS, well, they missed an average of just 3 work days a year. The researchers noted that those people living with MS who reported pain as one of their symptoms, well, they were significantly more likely to miss work than those people living with MS who weren't experiencing pain. They also noted that people living with MS who were unmarried, divorced, separated, or widowed were twice as likely to miss work compared to people who were married or living with a partner. Missed workdays also related to geography. People with MS who lived in the Northeast were 70% more likely to experience higher rates of absenteeism compared to people living in the Midwest or the West. Now, the results of this study lead us to draw a couple of different conclusions. First, you have to ask yourself, what sorts of workplace accommodations can be made to make it easier for someone living with MS to do their job? And if you'd like a really good overview of this specific topic, I'll recommend that you check out episode 211 of Real Talk MS, where we take a deep dive into the ins and outs of employment with MS with Dr. Philip Rumrill, and I'll include that link in today's show notes. The other conclusion we might draw, or at least speculate on from this study, is asking what the absenteeism rates might look like if people had the opportunity to work from home. I know it doesn't fit every job in every sector of business and industry, but one of the positive takeaways from the COVID-19 lockdown is it was discovered people were more productive while working from home. I'm guessing they could be more present at their jobs too. Now, if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Speaking of MS symptoms that can keep you out of work, one of the symptoms of MS that can keep you from even getting out of bed is depression. And when you consider that 50% of the people living with MS will experience depression, it underscores the absolute need for making managing your mental health a priority. Joining me in a moment to talk about maintaining and strengthening your emotional well-being when you're living with MS is Dr. Dawn Eady. This is a conversation that you'll want to listen to and share. So in a moment, we'll meet my guest, Dr. Dawn Eady. Saying that it's been a stressful couple of years is probably the understatement of the day, maybe even the understatement of the year, and maybe longer than that. And as we all continue to emerge from a global pandemic, mental health has become an important issue, more important perhaps than ever before. Dr. Dawn Eady is joining me today to talk about maintaining and strengthening your emotional well-being when you're living with MS, and will introduce you to a new resource that I think you're going to find very helpful. Dr. Eady is a clinical psychologist in the University of Washington Medicine Division of Clinical and Neuropsychology, a professor of rehabilitation medicine, and the recipient of the Nancy and Buster Alvord Endowed Professorship in MS Research. Dr. Eady is also a member of the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee. Welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Eady.
Thank you.
Let's start our conversation with a definition. What does the term mental health mean?
You know, mental health really simply means a person's emotional or psychological health, as well as their social health or social health. Mental health touches everything. It's how we feel, how we think, how we act, and really influences our overall health.
What kinds of things influence a person's mental health?
Certainly for people with MS, we know that the disease itself can influence their mental health. So that lesions in the brain can sometimes contribute to or cause things like depression, anxiety, or other mental health symptoms. That's not the only thing, though. Certainly also people's life circumstances, situations, their environment, kind of what they do, their habits, all sorts of things interact with and overlap with MS and mental health. Also, we know that mental health symptoms can make MS symptoms worse. So, for example, sleep can make caused by depression can make, you know, other MS symptoms worse. And conversely, MS symptoms can also affect mental health.
What are some of the common mental health issues or disorders that people with MS might experience?
Certainly depression or depressive disorder, as it's sometimes called, is the most common. About 50% of people with MS will experience depression at some point in their lifetime. That doesn't mean they stay depressed. Depression is not necessarily a permanent state, but it is very common. And that's where people feel sad, irritable, lack of interest, depressed down, and it doesn't go away. It persists. And it often has other symptoms that go with it, like kind of withdrawing from other people, as I mentioned, irritability, problems thinking, problems sleeping, weight change, and feelings of hopelessness or worthlessness, and sometimes even thoughts of self-harm or suicide. That's the most the most well-researched one and the one that I think most people with MS are aware of. But also anxiety is also a common mental health concern. And not just that occasional feeling anxious before you do something you don't want to do or just a little bit of stress, but anxiety that persists where it's, you know, both the cognitive, the thinking thoughts of worry and thoughts that things are going poorly or that kind of anxiety, as well as the physical symptoms of anxiety, you know, increased heart rate, it affects your GI system, all sorts of things. And when anxiety persists for more than just a few days, that's a common, that's a sign of an anxiety disorder. A couple other things, stress is common in people with MS, as are sleep problems.
I have a feeling about the answer to this next question, but I always appreciate the opportunity to check in with an expert. Is mental health underdiagnosed among people living with MS?
Yes, absolutely. There are many people living with MS who have mental health symptoms or mental health disorders that are not getting diagnosed or not getting the help they need. And I think a really important takeaway for your listeners is that having MS does not mean you have to be depressed or you have to be anxious. Certainly it goes along with it, but these things are treatable, and many people with MS can live good lives despite the challenges of MS. So please, it's underdiagnosed. Bring it up with your provider. Seek help if your provider's not listening, because there's ways to get help.
There are different types of mental health treatments available, like talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and mindfulness-based interventions. Which treatments are particularly effective for people who are living with MS?
Yeah, we know that people with MS benefit from therapy, you know, counseling, talk therapy, psychotherapy, whatever you want to call it. But the research shows that certain types of therapy in particular have been useful for some of the conditions that go along with MS. So, for example, cognitive behavioral therapy, where people learn how to become more active, look at kind of how they're reacting to or responding to stressors and learn new ways of coping with stressors. We know that's very effective in treating depression in people with MS. We also know that mindfulness-based treatments are also effective for depression, like cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT. They're effective for anxiety, for stress, and they also have benefits for other symptoms like sleep, pain, and fatigue. Many of these mental health treatments are being shown to also reduce the impact of some of the what we sometimes call physical symptoms of MS, like pain and fatigue.
How can someone tell when it's time for them to consult with a mental health professional?
You know, certainly we all have ups and downs, and certainly with people with MS have added layers at times of stressful things they need to deal with. And so it's normal to have times of sadness or, stress. I mean, that's part of the human condition. It's time to seek help, however, when it's not just a temporary state in response to something going on, but that feelings of anxiety, feelings of depression or irritability, if your relationships are being negatively impacted, that's a sign when it persists and when it gets in the way of doing things that you need or want to do, that's when it's a good time to seek help.
And if you arrive at that moment and feel that it is an appropriate time to seek help, what's the best way for someone to find a mental health professional? And how important is it that they find someone who understands MS?
You know, I think the first stop would be to talk to your MS provider. If you have one that you trust, listens to you, who knows you, ask them for help. They may have providers in their clinic or that they can refer you to. If you don't have that, the National MS Society also has a wonderful online tool called Find Doctors and Resources, where you can type in the type of provider you want and kind of where you are, and you can find access to therapists, mental health providers. Also, reach out to your MS community and find out, you know, if you're involved in social media, follow any of, the websites or are in any groups, ask them or reach out to the MS Navigator program or navigators of the MS Society. You know, certainly I think it's helpful if the person that you see, the provider, has experience with or expertise in multiple sclerosis. If they don't, and there's no one who does, I still think it's important you see somebody. Many mental health care providers are trained to work with people with health conditions. So I think if you're really suffering, the most important thing is to see someone. An added bonus if they understand MS.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about something that people can start doing right now to improve their emotional well-being. In previous episodes of this podcast, we've talked about the benefits of exercise and physical activity. Now, people tend to think of these benefits in terms of their physical health, but do they also have an impact on mental health?
Absolutely. Exercise is medicine, not just for our physical health, but also for our mental health. Exercise has a positive impact on our mood. Studies have shown that exercise can decrease depression, anxiety, and stress, and also increase people's self-esteem and their confidence in their ability to just manage other challenges in their life. Exercise also helps a lot of the symptoms that go along with mental health concerns, like fatigue or sleep problems. So, you know, I'm always someone who talks with the people I see that about exercise as one tool for managing mental health concerns.
I think a lot of us have found that sometimes the most challenging part of exercise is being consistent. What's the best way for someone to stay motivated?
Well, certainly if you haven't seen an exercise specialist and think that might be helpful, you know, talking with your doctor about maybe seeing a physical therapist or some other person with MS expertise, they can help you design a program that works around some of the issues that get in the way, like heat intolerance or fatigue. However you do it, whether with them or on your own, it's really important to start small. You know, so for example, if you think you can walk or do some yoga for 15 minutes, start at 10 minutes. Start small so that you can build your goals gradually and find something you enjoy. You know, there's many different ways to get physical activity, even if you have limitations. So find something you enjoy. Even it's a bonus if you can do it with somebody else, if you find that helpful. And try to find ways to work brief amounts of activity into your day. That's another good way to kind of stay motivated and to make progress, is to not overdo it and do things you enjoy.
I think that people in the MS community for a very long time have heard about the value and importance of developing coping skills and building resilience. Certainly over the past couple of years, the rest of the world has gotten the message about the importance of developing coping skills and building resilience. What sorts of things can someone who's living with MS do to build those skills and build that resilience?
Well, certainly we've talked about one already, and that's exercise. That also builds resilience and coping. Also, engaging in other types of activities, and I don't mean necessarily physical, but social or other valued activities. So, for example, if you're somebody who really enjoys other people, you know, making sure you get out there, even if you don't feel like it, and you know, socialize, whether it's in a church group or some other community organization, with friends, family, you know, even if you have to do it remotely because of concerns or difficulties getting out, you know, engage with other people. That's a really important way to build our resilience. You know, the foundational things like eating healthy, getting good sleep if you can. I know it's hard when you're stressed or when things are, you have a mental health condition, but, you know, working on trying to get good sleep and rest. Doing things that kind of build up your positive emotions. Like, you know, doing things that bring you pleasure or fun. And it might sound frivolous, but, you know, if you enjoy a comic strip, make sure you read it every day, or a YouTube video that's funny, or, you know, you really enjoy a hot cup of tea. You know, doing little things that bring you moments of pleasure, even if they're very simple, can accumulate and kind of fill up your, what we call your resilience bank. So there's many other ways that you can do that are available to you in the resources of the society.
Well, speaking of resources, not very long ago, you and another friend of the podcast, Dr. Megan Beyer from the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, completed work on a new resource entitled What to Expect from Mental Health Care, a Guide for People with MS. Where did the idea for this guide come from?
You know, the National MS Society has long championed mental health as part of overall healthcare for people with MS. I think, though, the last few years with everything that's gone on with the pandemic and the stressors, that you know, as you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, mental health has come to the forefront of our attention. And certainly the Society CEO, Cindy Zeghi-Boilo, recognized that the society needed to be very clear about what good mental health care looks like and should be for people with MS. So under her leadership and the leadership of the society's National Medical Advisory Committee, they charged a subgroup of us to develop the guide. And this guide, just to illustrate how mental health interacts with other types of health. The guide was written by a team of experts with different backgrounds, including physical therapy, occupational therapy, nursing, in addition to mental health.
Well, tell me, what sorts of information will people find in this guide?
Yeah, the guide describes what mental health is and some of the most common mental health concerns. It talks about how to seek help, types of mental health providers that are out there, as well as types of mental health treatment, some of which we briefly mentioned here today. Really gets into the details about how to find a mental health provider, what questions to ask yourself and a mental health provider to set you up for a helpful relationship, and what to expect from that mental health care visit. There's also resources on navigating health insurance, especially if you don't have insurance or your insurance doesn't cover mental health care, how to find one, how to find providers if you're having a hard time. And one of the parts I'm most excited about is that the guide also goes into some detail about things people with MS can do right now to improve their mental health. And as part of that, there are many resources and links in the guide that anyone who has MS can benefit from.
Well, this sounds like a terrific new resource. People can find it by visiting nationalmssociety.org/emotionalwellbeing and then look for it under the additional resources section at the bottom of the page. I'm going to make sure that link is in today's show notes. And for those of you who have the Real Talk MS app installed on your iOS or Android phone or tablet, you will find your copy of that guide under the bonus content tab. Dr. Dawn Eady, thank you for all you do to improve the quality of life for people affected by MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/263. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into your email or text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.